Hello, everyone. Welcome to NBA Unwrapped, where we unwrap the hottest takes from around the NBA. I'm Corbin Weinerman, joined by, as always, Perry Aston. Perry, what's going on?
What's up, everybody? Happy to be here.
Yeah, just finished watching Game 3 of the NBA Finals. We're going to get into all of that, if the Warriors still have a chance being down 2-1. But before we do, I want to remind all you guys to go ahead and follow us on Twitter, at NBA Unwrapped. You can follow our network page on Twitter, at Unwrapped Sports. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Unwrapped and Perry on Twitter at Perry Aston. Also, make sure to check out our website, unwrappedsports.com. And as far as podcasts go, we've come a long way. We are now not just on Apple iTunes podcast and not just on Spotify either. So we have iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Podcast, Pocket Casts, and Radio Public. So if you pretty much listen to podcasts on any platform, if we're not already on there, we will be on there soon. Really excited about this. We want to thank Anchor for giving us this opportunity to get onto all of these different platforms. Go ahead and check us out on Anchor as well. We're on there. And if you guys are on the Apple iTunes podcast app, please go ahead and give us a 5-star review. We really appreciate it. It just helps us continue to grow and continue to send out good content to all of you guys. So help us out. And in turn, we'll help you out. And Perry, you want to talk a little bit more about...
We also got to follow our sponsor, Yamble Sports. You can download them for Apple or Android. It's an app to where you can make pregame and in-game takes where they give you 50 points to start off with, and you kind of put them down before the game starts. And as the game continues, you can accumulate those to the end, and if you have the most points, you can win some money. You don't have to set up a card. You don't have to do anything. It's completely free. They just give you 50 points you mess around with. Trust me, if they had to put up a card, I don't know if I'd be able to do it. But because it's not, I'm having the best time doing it. Today, and the thing is now, we're doing our own Unwrapped Finals challenges to where beyond just the general pool for Yamble Sports, you can play with us at Unwrapped, all of our contributors, all of our friends here. We're all in our separate pool to where there's money to be given out there as well. And you're playing in both at the same time, our contest and the general one. So if you're absolutely killing it, you can win both. And you're not, like we said, putting down any card. It's completely free. Watch the game and win 15 bucks, win 20 bucks, win 30 bucks, win 40 bucks. It's crazy how fun this game is. And they're really not asking for too much. All you have to do is download it and start playing. And for us at Unwrapped, take our word and join our Unwrapped challenge. If you don't like it, you know, you can blame us here. But for us, we truly believe this is an app that we're having the best time with. Our contributors, thank you so much for playing with us. And thank you for everything that you guys do with all of the articles, all the podcasts we've been putting out for our partner podcasts. We're so proud of the content that we're putting out at Unwrapped Sports Network. It's so consistent now. And the platforms that we're now entering, we're very proud. Like you said, it's been a long time coming for NBA Unwrapped in particular. It's been over 2 years now, or just about 2 years for us, yep, for NBA, which is amazing. We're so proud of that. So it's been a long time coming. Corbin and I are super excited to continue doing this here.
Yeah, and guys, if you're not on the Yamble, go ahead and join. Please, I need a challenge. We've gone through 3 games of the NBA Finals so far. God. In our group, I got first place in Game 1, second place in Game 2, first place for Game 3. I've won, I think, at least, what, $40 just by placing takes as I'm watching the game. And not even watching the game. 2 out of the 3 games, I was driving for at least one half. So, clearly, I need someone who really knows their stuff.
Yeah, Corbin clearly ran over 2 people during those journeys, playing as much as he's doing.
But you know what? I won some money.
No, seriously, you guys got to go check them out.
It's really fun.
At Yamble Sports, and remember to go check out our website and find all of the content from us. Let's jump into a very jam-packed episode for NBA Unwrapped, since it's the beef of the season right now, NBA Finals. What a finals it is also. The Warriors and the Raptors duking it out. We all thought this was the Warriors' year yet again, but we did say the only way that they would go down is if the Warriors beat themselves. That was rather going to be a suspension or them having injuries riddle this roster. So we're seeing it now. KD's down. Klay Thompson was out. It's really affecting this team. And Curry put on a show. Steph put up 47 points. I believe we said it was 45%. From the field.
14 of 31.
Absolutely crazy. He put up all of his effort there and just wasn't quite enough against Toronto. Yeah, but yeah. Now it's even more interesting at 2-1. The Warriors have their backs against the wall a little bit, which is something we definitely did not expect to be saying at this season. Yeah. We expected maybe next year after a lot of these key pieces had, you know, the off-season decisions, we were going to possibly see a different team next year. But with the roster going on right now, we did not expect this, especially against a Raptors team that's got a first-year head coach, a first-year star, a lot of players that haven't been here before. Didn't expect this, to be 100% honest.
Yeah, I find it ironic that last year, LeBron James, look, the Cavs got swept. LeBron James, I thought last year might have been the best year of his career in terms of just how he impacted the game, especially when the playoffs and finals came around. This year, Stephen Curry is getting a taste of what it was like to be LeBron last year, where you are so good, but you just do not have any help. And it's so strange to say that about the Warriors, but when you take away Kevin Durant, you take away Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry, I thought that he would struggle a lot more than he had, especially in Game 3 without Klay Thompson, where I thought the defense could just key in on him.
Right.
He impressed me, which I didn't think was possible for Curry to do anymore. But he put forth a Herculean effort. He had 47 points, 6 of 14 from 3, 13 of 14 from the free throw line. He had 8 rebounds, 7 assists. He had all 8 of those rebounds in the first half, by the way. 2 steals. That's a stat line that you would expect from someone like LeBron James. Right. Actually, only LeBron James in the playoffs. And for Stephen Curry at 6'3" to be able to do that, that's incredibly impressive. I didn't expect that, but at the same time, it's not the same impact as if LeBron had done that, just because LeBron is a lot bigger and he can impact the game in a lot of other ways that Stephen Curry can't, that aren't going to show on the stat sheet. But for this game in Game 3, what I took away from it is that, look, obviously the Warriors need one of Klay Thompson or Kevin Durant. Right. I think if Klay Thompson plays in this game, I don't want to say that the Warriors for sure win this game, but the Raptors don't kind of cruise through the entire game like they did. If Kevin Durant's playing instead of Klay Thompson, I would argue, look, it's the first game back in Oracle. Warriors are desperate for a win. I think they come out on top. But without either of them, if Klay Thompson plays the rest of the series, I would still probably put my money on the Raptors, but it's pretty close. If Kevin Durant plays instead of Klay Thompson, even with the Warriors being down 2-1, if Klay Thompson doesn't play at all the rest of the series and Durant's back by Game 4, which it doesn't look like he's going to, but if he is, then I think Warriors win this. They could, you know, I'd say it still goes 7, because I think the Raptors can still win one game.
Right.
If both of them come back, yeah, Warriors still win, even being down 2-1.
I think any of those scenarios, I still see the Warriors pulling this out.
What, even without Klay and Kevin Durant?
No, you didn't bring that scenario. It was, Klay coming back without KD.
As long as one of the two of them.
KD coming back without, or if they both came back. I think all three of those come out with a Warriors victory and another ring for them.
Let me ask you, so how quickly do one or both of them have to come back? Like if Kevin Durant is back by Game 5 but not Game 4, and Klay Thompson's out for the series, do you still think the Warriors win?
Yeah, I think regardless, this is going to be a 7-game series. And
as long as one of the two of them come back, right?
Yeah, but Steph Curry right now, he's playing at a level to where he may outshoot this Raptors team. Like, if Danny Green doesn't shoot the way he was shooting today, it's a different game. You know, if Klay Thompson's back, you just said it yourself, it may have been a completely different game. That's all obviously hypothetical. But you need to look at it now for a Warriors team that has 10 times the amount of finals experience on the other side of the ball. Right now, you need to really dig your heels deep and realize that Steve Kerr is an amazing coach, and you're going to have to find ways to outcoach a first-year, you know, led team with Nick Nurse and a first-year star with Kawhi Leonard and a lot of pieces that haven't been there before. And the Warriors are experienced, even if maybe Klay is out for one more game and then comes back and KD's out for the rest of the series, I'm still going to give it to the Warriors in 7. I have confidence that they're going to win this next game. It will be even grounds. The momentum will be kind of evened out, and we'll see how it goes from there.
Wait, you think they win this next game regardless of if Klay and Kevin Durant are in or not? Or do one of the two of them at least have to play?
Honestly, I just, with Steph, you saw the kind of performance he put on tonight, and it wasn't enough. So it's going to have to take a lot more effort from that bench. It's going to have to take some other players like Iggy or somebody else that just catches a hot hand. If that's Draymond that puts up a 25-point game, or
that's asking a lot.
I mean, I think, that's you have. I think you're asking two of your stars. I think there's a
higher likelihood that Curry scores another 45 instead of Green scoring 25.
Right, but if Curry scores 45, you still need another guy to put up 20 behind him. Right now,
I don't think Curry's going to score 45 again either.
It's unlikely if they're both out, but I still think somehow, regardless of the lineup next game, the Warriors find a way to hit the tape. Come back, play strong, and even out this series. And the momentum's going to even out. I really do. And we'll see how the health of these two players are. Because as of right now, I can't tell you confidently either way that I think the Raptors are going to win this series or the Warriors are. Because I don't know how it's going to be health-wise. And exactly. You don't either. And that's why we keep going back and forth. It's
so hard to predict.
Yeah, we're going back and forth with all these hypotheticals. But at the end of the day, we're not going to know until tomorrow when they give us another health update. And then the day after that, and then the day after that, they're going to continue to give us leaked tweets about how it's going and how it's rumored for the next game and the game after that. All we know is this is going to be, I think, a long series, 6-7 games guaranteed. I think 7 games right now, regardless of health, we can throw up between teams. I think with just how it all shakes out, my gut feeling, and it's all you can go with at this point with the information that we have, I don't see the Raptors closing this out like this. I don't see the Warriors going down at 5. I don't see them going down at 6, to be honest. That's just my gut feeling, is that this is going to be a 7-game series, and it's going to come down to experience. Unless Kawhi pulls off some hero shit and throws up some ball that bounces 12 times and goes in. And that's going to be the only way, is if this is a Cinderella story. Just like, to be honest, it's been for Toronto, who is in the NBA Finals for the first time in team history. So if it were to go down, it's going to go down this year. First time in team history. It's going to be against this juggernaut, regardless of the health. If it happens and all the stars align, it's going to be this year. But not saying the Raptors' window is closing. I'm just saying it feels like it's in the air. But that really depends on what the doctors say, because as soon as those words leave their mouth that Kevin Durant is back, Klay Thompson is back, the feeling in the air starts to go away. That's going to be more of a, okay, now we got a series and we got the champions back. And it's not going to take them a while to come back and, you know, integrate themselves, in my opinion. I really think it's the second they're back on the floor, they're back on the floor. And this team, at any time, if they get a big contribution from Draymond, from Boogie, from Iggy, from any of these guys on this team that can put up 20, they definitely can, along with a 35-point Steph Curry performance. That's a key to a victory if the other side, if Toronto's not shooting the way they were tonight and they're playing some defense like they were at the end, because Golden State, they were fighting. At the end, they were fighting for this game. You saw Steph diving for balls. You saw Draymond Green playing like the best defender in the league. Like, when he gives a shit, he's the best defender in the league, which is like 5% of the time. Mm-hmm. So you see it 5-10% of the time, Draymond is crazy. I can guarantee you can stop all 5 positions, but the other time, he's a little bit lazy and he just, I don't think he's ever going to hit that full potential that he can hit as a player if he's on the Warriors, because he's going to have to give up a little bit to contribute to this team fully. And he does a little bit of everything, and he's an off-the-box score player. But you saw how hard they were hustling. You saw the fear in their eyes that this is a series that they need to work for. Not that they didn't think they were going into this series, but I think now it's starting to become a realization that this is a tough spot for them, and they may have just beaten themselves.
So the first series this year that they really have to work for. The Clippers tested them somewhat. The Rockets did somewhat. I want to hit on two things you talked about. First, you saying that this series will not go 5. It's going to be a long series. If Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant do not play at all the rest of this series,
I just don't see that happening.
I don't know. I just don't know. With hamstring injuries, you never know. The Klay Thompson.
Stop with the hypotheticals reports, and go with your gut now. How many games do you think
I am saying if Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant do not come back, the Warriors do not win another game. Because Stephen Curry is not having another game like this. And as we saw, even when he does have a game like this, it's not even close to enough. But you're
talking about the Raptors like they're the Warriors.
No, no, no.
But the Raptors are going to have another game.
But you're also saying because the Warriors are going to defend. Defend with who? Because
I'm just saying, are the Raptors going to shoot like this again? Are they going to play like the hero ball again?
Two of the Warriors' three best defenders, Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant, the other best defender being Draymond Green, two of their top three defenders are out. Their two best perimeter defenders are out. If they're out for the rest of the series, or at least for games 4 and 5, there is no game 6. The Raptors finish this off in 5. But it's so hard, like you said, so hard to predict because who knows? Hamstring injuries are so tricky. Klay Thompson could be back. He could not. He could come back and then he could re-injure it. And Kevin Durant, no one knows if it's a strained calf, if it's a torn calf. Some people still think it's a ruptured Achilles. I find that really hard to believe, and I think that the Warriors would have... Yeah, it's not a ruptured Achilles, but I don't even think it's a torn calf because, look, the Warriors could get in trouble for lying about an injury. So I think it's a strained calf. It's just a tough one to come back from. That stuff's tricky too, but we'll see. The other thing I wanted to touch on was you said that Steve Kerr is an amazing coach.
No, I said he's a great coach.
Or a great coach. Yes, he's a very good coach, but he's not a great tactician where he's going to scheme ways for the Warriors to get easy looks for themselves. He's incredible, one of the best coaches in NBA history at getting players to buy in and getting players with large egos like the Warriors have to all buy in and buy into a team concept instead of an individual concept. And his ability to create the culture that he has in Golden State, there isn't another coach in the NBA outside of Greg Popovich who could do something like that. But when you're down Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson, that's where Steve Kerr's greatest strengths can't shine as much as they would normally.
I'm not saying that you're not giving him credit because you are, obviously, and you're pointing out the fact that, you know, of course he's leaning on some of his best players, his best assets. I just have a little bit more confidence, and I think he's a pretty good tactician.
I'm not saying he's a bad tactician.
Beyond the culture that he's built, I truly believe that he's a good X's and O guy. I believe that this team, the ball movement is amazing. Some of the plays that, you know, happen with this team, some of it's just pure talent outworking less talented players and it just looking so smooth. But some of these easy alley-oops, some of these, you know, this ball movement, some of these open shots, some of these plays, they're not just the players being more talented than other teams. Like, some of that is the coaching, and I truly believe that. And I'm not trying to say Steve Kerr's the best coach of all time, because he's going to have to pull a Phil Jackson, go leave with another team, start over, and go do the same thing again, prove that it's all you. But, you know, you got to give it to him where he's at right now. And if you're looking at Nick Nurse, who's just taken over the Raptors, and you need to compare coaches, just compare the two. You could, you know, go split hairs with Steve Kerr and how we feel about a coach that's been uber successful. But when you compare the coaching resumes of the two of them and the experience, it's not even a conversation. It's not a debate. It's not a conversation. It's not even something that we could say out loud.
No, it's not.
It's a joke. So I'm saying is, at the end of the day, if the coaching is going to have an impact on the rest of this series, if it does, and we do see something change here, it's going to be a Steve Kerr-led win over Nick Nurse every time, in my opinion. Unless it's talent outworking less talent. But that's going to be the Warriors defeating themselves, not having enough talent on the floor, and the Raptors just being healthy and playing out of their mind and playing great team ball. Because they are very well coached. And please do not think that we're taking credit away from Nick Nurse.
No, Nick Nurse, look what he's done.
Look what he's done this year. He's fantastic.
And to his credit, when the Raptors hired him, he was viewed as an offensive mastermind and
a player's coach.
Yeah, but someone who was great offensively and needed to work defensively. The Raptors, especially this series, and part of it's due to the Warriors' injuries, but even for these playoffs, they've been much better defensively, right, I would argue, than offensively. And that's surprising when you think of how Nick Nurse was viewed less than a year ago.
Well, look at this team, though. You got Kawhi, Marc Gasol, former Defensive Player of the Year. Yep. You got Serge Ibaka, who had like 15 blocks today. He's all over the place, always such a hustle guy. Danny Green, who's also a really great defender, who's come from a Popovich system.
Kyle Lowry.
You have Kyle Lowry, who's also a pretty good defender.
I think he made first team.
Yeah, you have a lot of amazing defensive players on this team. And, you know, with the mixture of Nick Nurse there, who is a player's coach, you know, and he's building a culture as well. look at what they're building there. And we said it since the beginning. And you brought up the question before this podcast that we'll just briefly touch on, that if this makes a difference in Kawhi's decision this summer, if he's going to stay or not because they're in the championship, or if they win the championship or not. I said the second he got traded, it's a done deal. He's staying. It's too perfect of a match. And then he signs with New Balance, which is even weirder.
Yeah.
Even better of a match. He's wearing New Balances in Toronto.
It was just strange he signed a contract while he was still in Toronto. If he was looking to leave, wouldn't he wait to sign a bigger shoe deal once he got to LA, for example?
Right. And he was having issues with the shoe deal before he left to New Balance with Jordan and everything in San Antonio, in that market. So he, I think, is flourishing in a new market. And the team that he went to, which seems like he's happy at, which doesn't have a lot of drama and is pretty low profile in regards to the, you know, the drama and the theatrics. Yeah. And he's in a city that's perfect.
Don't tell Drake that.
Yeah, he's in a city that's perfect for him, and they're in the championship. Where do you go that's a better scenario than that? There is none. They're going to run it back next year. They're going to find a way to, if not bring back the entire roster, bring back core pieces, and find ways to build on top, because that's what good teams do nowadays. And if this team with DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry and Dwayne Casey, who I think is a very good coach, if they couldn't get past LeBron, they couldn't make it happen all those years, and then this year, they don't make too many changes, but they make one big trade, and then later on in the year, solidify that with bringing in a key veteran like Marc Gasol. Just two trades like that are the key to them now being here. Because Jeremy Lin hasn't done shit. That addition hasn't done anything. So,
well, it's because Fred VanVleet didn't give him a chance.
Van Vliet's playing fantastic, too. Shout out to Fred VanVleet. What a great performance he's put on this playoffs.
Undrafted.
Zero to hero.
Yeah.
That's the straight zero to hero. We're going to move on to All-NBA first team, second and third. Kind of give our reaction to all of them. And then we also have the MVP candidates and the Rookie of the Year candidates that we're going to both give our prediction for. We're going to start with the All-NBA first team, starting with Steph Curry. We've talked a lot about in this podcast. He's heading that one with James Harden, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Nikola Jokic, and Paul George. What do you think about the first team? Any snubs? Any person that was too highly valued?
No, I think first team, they got it right. Just, I'll get to my overall impressions of all the NBA teams once we've gone through all of them, but first team, there really isn't an argument to be made anywhere. James Harden and Giannis were the two leaders for MVP.
And Paul George being third.
Yeah. The only thing that I think you could maybe argue is Jokic or Joel Embiid for the first team All-NBA center spot. There's another thing I want to talk about too, but we'll wait until we get through all the All-NBAs. So I'll talk about the All-NBA second team. Second team at the guard spot was Damian Lillard and Kyrie Irving. Forward positions were Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard, and Joel Embiid was second team All-NBA. Do you have any thoughts about second team?
I really thought that it was a pretty good lineup. I just, like you said, thought Joel Embiid possibly deserved to be a first-team player. He really played out of his mind this year, but
I think Jokic
played really well, too, and on a team that really performed in a very hard West. So if you're going to take team consideration in there, too, which I don't know if they're going to take that for all NBA, but he was on a team that he really made a lot of wins happened for this year.
Yeah, but both teams, Sixers were third in the East, right. Nuggets were second in the West.
But that, to me also, to be second in the West compared to third in the East is a big difference.
I would say Embiid should have been first team, but I don't think that he got robbed by being second team instead of first team. You're splitting hairs between
Yeah, I'm not going to really get too crazy about second team either. I really think they did a pretty good job with second team. There wasn't a lot. I mean, you can make the Russell Westbrook argument any year, because now apparently it's casual to get a triple-double. Like, we don't think it's a big deal
anymore.
That
is crazy. Three straight seasons.
Can we believe that? Let's bring that up for a second.
Did anyone talk about that at all?
No, I talked about that with someone else at my work. Someone brought that up.
No, but you don't hear that.
Yeah, they asked me. They said, Perry, what do you think about the All-NBA teams? I know you talk basketball. I know you love your sports. So let me hear what you think. And first thing that I said was, you know, why are you going to do him like that? Like, I think Russell Westbrook never gets the credit that he deserves. He just gets hated on. And it's because he's such a big personality and picks fights with so many different people, which I love. I love the pit bull mentality. I love how fiery he is.
I like his mentality.
I love that. Every time he hits the basketball court, he's the most competitive person out there. It reminds me of Kobe Bryant. Not comparing them as players. You know I wouldn't do that. Hell no.
They're much,
but you know that Mamba mentality that we talk about? who has more of a mama mentality in the league when it comes to eye of the tiger, like I want to rip your head off? I think Russell Westbrook's got to be the number one person that would be since Kobe Bryant with that, you know, I'm better than you. I'm going to be that guy out there every single time. And I respect that. And you're going to put up a triple-double 3 years in a row and it's no one talks about it. Come on. This is a new NBA apparently, but Russell Westbrook, you deserve nothing but praise. Keep talking shit. You are putting on a show. I am blessed to be able to watch you play basketball and make history. This has never happened, ever. To get this once was a massive deal. And three times in a row, and he's doing it like it's nothing, and who knows how much longer he's going to keep this going. That's historic. Historic. Yeah. And it needs to be said because it's not enough.
Yeah, so talking about Russell Westbrook, All-NBA third team, Russell Westbrook was on it along with Kemba Walker at the guard position, Blake Griffin and LeBron James at the forward spots, and Rudy Gobert at the center position. Really quickly, while we're still on the topic of Russell Westbrook, as incredible as it was for him to average the triple-double his first year he did it, that first year, it was right after Kevin Durant left. There was no Paul George. He was the only bona fide superstar on that team.
It was all him.
These last 2 years, he's had Paul George on his team, and he has still put up triple-doubles. But this year, although he did put up a triple-double, he had a drop in his efficiency. It was clear he was not the same player this year as he was the year before.
Right.
Maybe it was
was
some injury stuff that we don't completely know about. We'll see how he reacts next year.
I think it
year.
Was his knee. Yeah, that has been bothering him a lot of the year.
But I mean, throw percentage though, he was down at around 64% or something.
But you also have to look at
he's about 80%.
The kind of year that Paul George had.
Yeah.
He was the star of the team this year. And while Russell, he went and put on a triple double, that's fantastic. You got to give that up.
That is incredible. And Westbrook, to his credit, for the most part, deferred to Paul George and knew, okay, this is Paul George's team for the time being.
And they were both, you know, unhealthy at separate times, too. So when they were both on the floor together, they were effective. So I can't wait to see a year that they're both healthy together and add more and more to this team, if that ever happens.
Yeah, I worry with Russell Westbrook. I don't really like who he is as a person just because the thing that really bugs me is how he holds grudges with media members. And if you...
I think some people are just cut from the cloth. But if
our listeners don't know about that, go ahead and look it up. There's someone with the Oklahoman that Russell Westbrook will not talk to, and whenever he asks a question, Westbrook just ignores him because he wrote something critical of him 4 years ago or something. So that kind of bugs me. I mean, the guy's just trying to do his job. But aside from that, look, the All-NBA teams are based on your performance on the court, not off the court.
Right.
I think Russell Westbrook should have been second team All-NBA.
I agree.
Damian Lillard deserved to be second team. I would switch Kyrie Irving with Westbrook. Kyrie still deserved an All-NBA nod, but be third team.
I think Kyrie had a great season, but like we just said, Russell Westbrook, what he's doing needs to be noticed. That is unbelievable that you can average a triple-double and be a third team All-NBA. Ridiculous.
Yeah. One thing, though, that I would like to see change just from the All-NBA teams in general, and this has been talked about a lot on different shows, but the way the NBA is going now with positionless basketball, why for All-NBA teams does it have to be two guards, two forwards, one center? People talk about All-NBA teams, and they always talk All-NBA teams, and oh, these are the 15 best players in the NBA. No, they're not. They are the six best guards in the NBA, the six best forwards in the NBA, and the three best centers. And when you, even for the NBA All-Star voting, no longer have a center, it's just three front court and two back court positions. Why for the All-NBA teams do you have to have three designated centers when the center position, for the most part, has died out? There's still a few good centers.
So you're saying
Nikola
to do the same kind
just
of
do,
format as the All-Star
no,
game?
No. I don't even want it like the All-Star game where it's two backcourt and three frontcourt. I just want who are the five best players in the NBA this year.
That.
And that way we don't have any... There's been times in the past with, I think, Anthony Davis where some people voted him in as a center, some as a power forward. I think they all counted the same, but then he got move to the forward position instead of the center position, which opened up another spot for a center. Why do that?
It's
just
confusing.
The five best players, you vote for them. Each voter has five spots for first team, second team, third team. and you take it from there.
And if you can't hit Corbin's idea right now, at least, like you said, with the All-Star game, at least meet halfway.
But if you do it the way that I was talking about, and there's five guards on the first team All-NBA, so what? There's not going to be. There's going to be forwards, obviously, with Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Giannis. LeBron. But, yeah, LeBron got third team All-NBA. This is based off of this past season's performance, and LeBron, even though he averaged 27, like 8.5 and 8.5.
Statistically, he deserved to be there, but he missed a huge part of the
season. This was the first time since, I believe, 07, either 06 or 07, that LeBron James was not first team All-NBA. I think it was 07, because he had 11 straight years where he was first team All-NBA.
And eight straight NBA finals, which is
unbelievable.
Absurd.
But, look, he did not deserve to be first team All-NBA. Probably not second team All-NBA either. He didn't. Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard had better years because they were healthy. Second. But LeBron James is not the fifth or sixth best forward in the NBA. So let's just get that straight. So yeah, I would like to see the NBA do away with the positions. And then two, I've said this before, I think it's stupid. So Klay Thompson lost out on $31 million because he wasn't on one of the three All-NBA teams.
Yeah.
The way that the NBA's collective bargaining agreement is set up with the players and the NBA, they agreed to this, so the players are just as much at fault as this as the NBA itself, was that you are only eligible for a Supermax if you make one of the three All-NBA teams, if you're an MVP, or I think, what was it, or MVP or Defensive Player of the Year, that's what it was. And look, Klay Thompson's a great defender, he's never going to win Defensive Player of the Year. He's a great player. He's never going to win MVP. You have an argument to be made there if he should have been All-NBA third team over Kemba Walker. The way the rules are set up, I'm happy Kemba made it over Klay Thompson because it's much harder for Charlotte to sell Kemba on coming back to the organization than it is for the Warriors to sell Klay. And that extra $31 million for Kemba is going to go a long way for the Hornets if they decide to give him a Supermax. There's right. still a debate to be had there because I would argue that the Hornets have kind of topped out as far as how good they can be with Kemba Walker.
And the boys, you know what I mean? Yeah, you
just
need
stuck
to have
in
support.
Mediocrity.
Yeah.
But
you're the new Magic, how
but
they were.
The NBA, and the crazy thing is that it's the media who votes on this. It's not even like it's people actually in the NBA. I know the media covers the NBA, but they're not NBA personnel. So to have $31 million hanging in the balance based off of how a media member sees different players, I just don't get it. If an NBA team wants to pay someone a supermax contract, they should be able to. Don't leave it up to the media. Don't leave it up to if you make an All-NBA team or not. Klay Thompson is worthy of a supermax from the Warriors. Kemba Walker is worthy of a supermax from the Charlotte Hornets. Bradley Beal's another guy who missed out on a supermax.
Well, for this one, too, the other end of the spectrum, I believe that Rudy Gobert now is in talks for a supermax, and I don't think that's worth it. For a supermax for him, but he's now eligible. So he pretty much took the spot that Klay Thompson would be in, which is extremely interesting.
Yeah, if you had positionless basketball, right. Klay Thompson would, even if you have the media.
10 out of 10 times.
If you have the media voting on this, yeah, Klay absolutely makes it over Rudy Gobert. Sure. Gobert's a good player, but look, the center position isn't
as
strong as it has.
No way.
Not close.
But because he's a center, he gets lucky. We're going to make a prediction right now. NBA MVP. Who do you think it's going to be between Giannis and James Harden and Paul George?
Giannis.
I completely agree.
I think it's pretty clear. Even though, look, James Harden and Giannis and Paul George, all three of them did not have their best showing in the playoffs. But this is a regular season award. The voters all vote on the award before the playoffs even begin. It's just they don't announce this until after the playoffs are over. So the regular season, Giannis took a Milwaukee Bucks team who, before the season started, you could maybe argue, yeah, maybe they're a top five team in the East. No one saw them being the best record, not just in the East, but in the NBA. No one saw the team around Giannis being as good as it was. Part of its coaching with Mike Budenholzer, this was his first year as the head coach.
Ooh.
They brought in some nice players with especially Brooke Lopez. They got Eric Bledsoe last year. He was able to fit into the system. They surrounded Giannis with shooters with Malcolm Brogdon and Chris Middleton along with Brooke Lopez. Brought in Nikola Mirotic. But do not mistake that with they had the best record in the NBA. They were that dominant throughout the regular season because of Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Right.
And James Harden had an incredible year, and from a stat perspective, a better year than Giannis. But an overall impact on the game, Giannis is one of the finalists for Defensive Player of the Year, too. James Harden's defense improved from years past, but still nowhere close to being a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. Giannis's overall impact was much greater than James Harden, and his team was better.
It's got to be Giannis. He's got the number one team, and he was out of his mind this year. And he's only going to get better. Imagine when he improves his shot. Imagine when he takes that next level. It's going to be even crazier than what you've seen him go from year ones to two to three.
And he showed a willingness to shoot in the playoffs.
Yeah.
At least somewhat.
We're going to do one more prediction. Rookie of the year, Luka Doncic, Trae Young, DeAndre Ayton. I don't even know why they have Ayton on here. It's because they need a third.
Because they need three. It's between Luka and Trae.
Yeah.
I'm going with Luka. Trae
put on a show at the end of that season.
He made it a lot closer
than he made a run.
It looked like it was going to be. Right. But Luka tapered off a little bit, it seemed to me.
He did.
But also part of it might just been because Trae Young was putting on such a show, we didn't pay as much attention to Luka. But still, Luka, just from the beginning to end, he had a more consistent year. And they both, at their highest points of the season, they were pretty close. So because of consistency, I'm going to go with Luka Doncic. What do you think?
I completely agree. He is already an NBA player. He's not a youngin that's, you know, coming into his own. He played in Europe. He already looks like he belongs on that floor with Porzingis on that team now. I really think this is going to be a special team. We're going to move on to the Lakers hiring Lionel Collins as an assistant coach. He's the all-time winningest coach in Memphis history. Also led Brooklyn to the playoffs. Collins joins Jason Kidd on Frank Vogel's new staff. What do you think about this now?
It's a good hire. I'm still waiting for the Lakers to hire an offensive-minded coach.
And if you didn't hear our rant on the last podcast, please go listen to episode 51. And fast forward to it, at least the part where we were talking about the Lakers. You need to hear Corbin pop a few blood vessels and me come back with some stuff too, because we weren't the happiest. But now we have moved on, and now there's some new news to talk about. But I really hope you guys heard that rant.
Yeah, it was please funny. Go check that out, because that I explain why I'm so frustrated with the Lakers and with them hiring Jason Kidd, which, by the way, a report came out a few days ago that Jason Kidd is now the highest paid assistant coach in the NBA. And if anyone wants to say counter my question about when are they going to hire an offensive minded coach by saying Jason Kidd is the offensive minded coach, you are kidding yourself. I'm going to hold back and just say you're kidding yourself. I could go off on anyone who says that, but Jason Kidd is not an offensive-minded coach.
With the Bucks coaching staff that they have now, if they can go and add an established shooting coach, right now they're in a good position. They're not a perfect coaching staff, but you realize how they've ran the team the last 2 years. Without a shooting coach, no one there to teach you how to improve your shot. It is ridiculous. So right now, just getting an established shooting coach, if not a subpar shooting coach, an average one, that is already an improvement from what we've had the last couple years. So just that alone, along with having two ex-head coaches under Vogel with Jason Kidd and now Lionel Collins.
Don't give me that.
He is a qualified assistant coach. He is not your favorite pick. You really hate the position that he's in, that you think he's gunning for Vogel's job. All I'm saying is, if you're going to talk about him being qualified to be an assistant coach in the NBA, absolutely. Okay. And you don't have to say he is the offensive guru for the team. That's not what we're saying. But he is definitely qualified to be an assistant coach in the NBA. He may not be a good person, like you said in the last pod. He may not have had the best track record. His NBA coaching head coaching record may not be the best.
It is not the best.
Yeah, I'm just saying. He's not a head coach, and I think both of us can hope that that's not how it's going to end up with the Lakers.
We're talking about
this new hire and Lionel Collins, who, like we just said, the most winningest coach in Memphis history. This is a solid coach.
It is
a really, really good veteran coach that's going to help this locker room and keep it cool. You know, you're talking about Jason Kidd being a little bit of a hothead, being, you know, a little shishi, and this is a guy that...
A little what?
Shishi, you know what I mean? Like, shishi. He's expensive, you know, he's, okay. You know, he's like, he's a little bling, you know, he's bling, he shouldn't be. Shines a little bit even if he doesn't need to, but I think Lionel Collins is a safe pick and a guy that's just old school. I really like that.
Yeah, it's a good pickup. Frank Vogel's a really good defensive coach. He just needs help offensively. Lionel Hollins is a great defensive coach too, so they should, in theory, be able to work well together. The thing I like more about the Lionel Hollins stuff, because Frank Vogel already had the defense somewhat handled, was just his experience, like you said, experience in the playoffs too, which I know right. Frank Vogel has. Jason Kidd has some experience there, so I'll give him that. But, I mean, just connecting the dots, Frank Vogel signed a 3-year contract when it's standard to give a coach a 5-year deal. Jason Kidd is the highest paid assistant in the NBA now. As soon as stuff starts going wrong for the Lakers, which we all know it will, how long until Jason Kidd's the head coach? I would be surprised.
We had Scott.
I would be surprised. Brown.
Like, we've gone through some coaches. So right now to have 3 ex-head coaches in one staff, and with the hopes that we'd be hiring a shooting coach and or offensive coach beyond Jason
Kidd.
Kyle
Kuzma reportedly hired a shooting coach for the summer too, by the way.
For himself or for the team?
No, for himself.
Hooking the team up. I would hope that they all have a shooting coach. You are millionaires, and I don't know if you pay for it or if a team or a sponsor or somebody pays for it. I doubt Kuzma's paying out of pocket.
I actually think he might.
I don't know. I mean, I think that depends.
Well, just because players pay to
If you want to be with the best of the best, then yeah, you're going to go out and seek that with money.
I would hope the Lakers would reimburse him, especially since, look, Kyle Kuzma...
Keep your receipts. Kyle Kuzma will get you back in the second period after our invoice is clear. You just let us know. We'll get you back with that reimbursement.
Kuzma isn't scrapping for change, but he is making a little over $1 million per year. And a shooting coach, especially a professional shooting coach that helps NBA players out, isn't going to be cheap. So I'd hope that the Lakers would help him out and like that he's actually doing that. Yeah. But they don't hire a shooting coach themselves. So who knows? Maybe they're against shooting coaches for some reason.
Yeah, we'll see. Anti-shooting. LeBron has already begun.
Look at their roster moves from last year. They are anti-shooting.
LeBron has already begun the recruiting process for this offseason. Quote, he's had contact with Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler. I know we've also heard Kyrie Irving as well, and the rumors going around with him coming to LA. There's a few options now, and funny enough, a source within Unwrapped, someone close to us, and I think it might have been you and Christian, the two
I'll just tell the story.
Yeah, we'll leave it to Corbin.
So Christian and I were at a restaurant for our work, and we were having breakfast, and Jimmy Butler just happened to be sitting right behind us. I'm mad that I chose the seat that I did because Jimmy Butler came in after, but he was literally right behind my back, but I could not see him without making it awkward. So I only turned around a few times trying to make it the least
amount of awkwardness.
Like
checking
his rear view
or something.
I was trying to think of any excuse to see that it was Jimmy Butler.
But Corbin took 3 poops at his breakfast. He just kept getting up.
But when we went to leave, one of our friends, Seif, who we also work with, went over to Jimmy Butler and just said, "Hey, Jimmy, pick the Lakers." And Jimmy looked at him and kind of just smiled and laughed, which, like, it doesn't mean anything. Him being in L.A. doesn't mean anything either. A lot of NBA players live in L.A.
Yeah, there was a couple people on Twitter that actually went at us and were like, "This is such a reach. Like, how are you guys coming to this conclusion?" And I read back on the tweet to make sure that we weren't coming to any conclusions, and we weren't. It was just us saying
it was just
we ran
thing.
Into him at, you know, the Beverly Hotel, and we asked him kind of a question, and he chuckled and laughed. That was it. You know, we didn't say L.A. confirmed, so I don't want any of you guys thinking that, but it's fun, and I think it's real cool that we got to see him. I think it's the perks of us having Unwrapped headquarters here in Los Angeles where all the athletes come and hang out. So we'll see. I mean, that could be a reason with him being in L.A., but, you know, athletes aren't in L.A.
Yeah, exactly.
In the offseason.
The thing that I would read more into is that Jimmy Butler, I think he posted on Instagram some picture of him in a plane on his way back from somewhere, and he was wearing purple and gold shoes, which you can read a little bit more into that. But him being in L.A. at a Beverly Hills Hotel eating at a nice restaurant.
I'd hope a millionaire would do that casually.
Yeah, I would hope so too. So that's nothing. But yeah, you're talking about the Kyrie Irving stuff. Rick Bucher said that Kyrie Irving is down to either the Nets or Lakers, and that it's 75% likely he goes to the Nets. Rick Bucher is someone who I think is a reliable source, not the most reliable, but he's not the only one reporting on stuff like that, that Kyrie is more so than the Lakers, the Nets, that he's seriously considering them. So
it Are really, the Knicks completely out of
well,
this?
It really sounds like the Knicks, not that they're completely out of it, but they are, from everything that I've heard, far, far back behind
the Nets, especially, and the Lakers. Kevin Durant is confirmed. What I've heard, and to be honest, what my gut feeling is saying, and like you were kind of mentioning when we were talking about Kevin Durant's injury, it's kind of sketchy. Like, it could be a torn Achilles, it could be a sprained ankle. You know, it could be something super minor, or it could be something that is a lot more than they're really putting out right now. And my gut feeling is that he's playing it safe, that he isn't playing right now when maybe he could. And I'm not saying that he's sitting himself, but I think that if there's a 50-50 shot, he's not playing like Kobe right now, where tape me up, put all my stuff in a body cast, and put me out there. I'm just going to shoot 23%. At least that's better than, you know, half the crappy guys that are on our bench. Put me out there, at least my leadership. You know, I just need to be there for the team. You know, Kevin Durant doesn't have that relationship with this roster. He's not, he doesn't bleed purple and gold like a guy like Kobe did. You know, this is a guy that got his rings. He came here. People dislike him, a lot of people, because of the way he came to Golden State. And we'll probably dislike him with the way that he ends up leaving, because he's not staying. And I think right now is the perfect way for him to leave. He's still going to get a ring if they win this. If they don't, it's not because of KD, because he was out for most of the series. It's just another asterisk as he goes to where he's on to the next legacy. And I'm not a Kevin Durant hater, so I bid him farewell to one of the best teams ever put together, if not the best team ever put together when healthy, by far. And we can have this debate. But with him leaving, this dynasty is starting to chip away, and we're starting to see the cracks come through with this series that we just mentioned before in the beginning of the podcast. We're starting to see a team that is maybe foreshadowing next season. You know, it may be a Curry-led team where he's trying to be a little bit more of a hero. And yeah, they're going to fill some spots. They'll have a little bit more money when they lose so many pieces. But if they lose KD and Klay and they find a way to fill roster spots, it'll be a very different team.
If they lose KD and Klay, I'd have to look at the numbers, but they are nowhere near close to being able to sign one max player. If they lose two of them, who are both max caliber players, just because they're so far over the salary cap, they might have a little bit of cap space, but honestly, I don't think it's even more than like $10 million in cap room. You said you're not a Kevin Durant hater. I appreciate Kevin Durant's talent, and he is one of the best players in the NBA. I hate what he did, his decision to come to the Warriors and just basically to the rest of the NBA say, this is how it's going to go for the next 3 years.
Make your rings, make your money, do what you need to do. I'm happy with it. I think the next step is going to define him.
Yeah, the only way that these finals end badly for Kevin Durant personally, for his legacy, is if he cannot come back and the Warriors find a way to win. Because then that shows,
they didn't need him.
They did not need him. And he literally just came to ride. He didn't ride the coattails of everyone else on the team because he played a big part in it. But even if he wasn't there, they still could have won. So
didn't they win 73 games the year before him?
Exactly.
So it's not like.
And it's not the same team. They don't have Harrison Barnes. Yes, they still have Andrew Bogut, but he's not as good.
You can say they don't have Harrison Barnes. Like, they would have found somebody else that would have replaced that production. Yeah. That's not the
same. Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala are both a lot older. But yeah, so let's move on to the next
topic. Well, we're going to just bring up a couple more, or really one more LeBron topic before moving on. Liverpool won Championship League earlier in the week against Tottenham. My dad's actually a Tottenham fan. A lot of my family's from England, so not the happiest loss on my part, although I don't give too much of a crap about it. I still, you know, want to hold it down for the family lines. But you know, congrats to Liverpool, who wins the Championship League.
Which means LeBron's a champion again.
A 2-0 win for LeBron James.
Even when he's not in the finals,
even when he's not, he's still a champion. Yeah, 8 finals in a row. He doesn't, so he finds a way to make a 9th. Which is fantastic.
Find a way to do that, Kevin Durant.
Yeah, LeBron has a 2% stake in Liverpool, which was valued at $6.5 million, worth over $45 million that day that they won the championship.
That's crazy.
Really crazy. One more kind of LeBron topic. It is his offspring, Bronny James and Zaire Wade, Dwayne Wade's kid. The two of them are both going to be playing at Sierra Canyon High School next season. So Miami Heat 2.0.
It'll be fun.
Yeah,
His stake in Liverpool, though, that's just crazy. I mean, Christian and I work in real estate with Seif, and we get good returns, but there's no way we could get anything even close to that. So
I mean, LeBron
has the highest in general
growing restaurant chain
Blaze
in
Pizza,
history,
right?
Or in the world currently with Blaze Pizza. So he is just a mogul, and not to mention he produces 75 different shows, and he's about to do Space Jam and all of this other stuff for him. LeBron James is the Magic Johnson of our time right now, because Magic Johnson, I think, was the first person to truly create a blueprint to be successful from being an athlete to an entrepreneur. And you can debate on his recent decisions, Magic Johnson, and past decisions.
If LeBron ran a team, but he would not screw them like
that. Yeah, I mean, you know, Magic wasn't always the best at decisions, clearly, but
no.
But you got it right. It took me twice.
Made a joke there, but
no, it took me twice. I think our audience hopefully got that one. But speaking of young talent, just like Bronny James and Zaire Wade, someone that's a little further than they are right now, Zion Williamson. The next LeBron James, as people are calling him, the best talent to come in this decade.
Yeah.
A lot of hype around this man. He's going to be coming in most likely to New Orleans to be playing for the Pelicans. And David Griffin, their new general manager, with or without Anthony Davis. So we're going to kind of group these two topics together about Zion Williamson, who potentially would be a Pelican, and someone who is currently a Pelican that might be on their way out. Anthony Davis, who we've talked about a trillion times. But the Pelicans have begun listening to trade offers for Anthony Davis. And it actually means something now, because they have someone with competence that is at the helm that is actually discussing these trades. So it's no longer just smoke and mirrors and media bullcrap. It's now, if they're saying they're talking trades legitimately and with the right purpose and fairly. So I know that, you know, David Griffin's got a good history. We were high on that hire. From people that cover the NBA.
I was shocked by the hire,
but amazing hire on their part. You could have found a better
person. I didn't
person.
Think the Pelicans could have been able to get someone like David Griffin.
But now moving on back to the first topic with Zion Williamson, who they got lucky to be landing the number one pick, which most likely be him.
It will be him.
He signed with
If they don't draft Zion Williamson, David Griffin, all the nice stuff I said about him, done. You're fired.
He signed with a couple agents, CAA Sports. CAA agent Austin Brown and Lisa Joseph Metellus will be representing Mr. Zion Williamson. So he now has representation, and they'll be taking that next step forward for the draft process. As long as everything goes down how we think it is, he's going to be in New Orleans. And people were saying he wasn't too happy about it, but you know, his camp, of course, is saying that he is. Why wouldn't he be? He's going to the NBA. He's going to the NBA.
He's about
number
to make,
one pick.
Make 8 figures as soon as he gets drafted.
It's perfect.
He's going to be happy. He could be playing on Pluto. He's still going
to
be happy.
So the Pelicans begin listening to trade offers for Anthony Davis. We don't have to cover this too much, but as of right now, what's your gut feeling telling you? What have you really seen? Is there anything of relevance right now, or is this more of just another fold in this story, and we're kind of just going to have to wait and see deeper into the summer kind of thing? But I think, at least for me, with David Griffin now here, this is serious compared to how it was before, which was just a lot of crap and a lot of jokes and just ran. We didn't even know what was going on, and now I think this is serious.
Yeah, we all thought that this was going to be coming at some point. David Griffin, when he got hired, even after the draft lottery, said he was going to do everything he could to try to keep Anthony Davis and that he thought he could get Davis to stay. He had to say that stuff. He met with Anthony Davis and Rich Paul a little over a week ago. They got breakfast. And all the reports came out that it was a good meeting. But now here we are a week later, and David Griffin is ready to trade Anthony Davis, which means in the meeting, it became clear, look, there's nothing that David Griffin can do. Anthony Davis, I'm sure, was just trying to negotiate with David Griffin. They came to an agreement. Anthony Davis will be traded at some point this summer. Don't know when it's going to be. There haven't been, surprising to me, there's been the report that David Griffin's listening to trade offers for Anthony Davis, but there haven't been any reports about even what teams have been calling. We know that the Knicks are going to call. We know for certain the Lakers are going to.
I saw a report that said Nuggets, actually, which is a
The Nuggets could make sense. The Nuggets, look, if the Nuggets want to take a chance like the Raptors did with Kawhi and the Thunder did with Paul George, they have the assets. They have the assets to make at least an extremely compelling offer compared to the teams we know are going to be after him. And the Celtics, they could make a really good offer too, but with Kyrie, it looks like, look, Danny Ainge said earlier today that Kyrie has given him no indication that he is leaving the Celtics.
He also said he had no regrets for signing Kyrie Irving, was another quote.
Or trading for him, but how could you ever regret when you traded Isaiah Thomas, who just became washed
as soon Crowder as you traded Jay Crowder.
Jay Crowder and some soup. Yeah, which J.R. Smith then threw in.
Yeah, here's a few cans of Campbell's. It's not an ad.
But, yeah, so really quickly, I mean, my take with all of this is that this stuff's going to start to heat up a lot more once the draft gets closer. We're about, what, 2.5-3 weeks away from the draft.
Right.
Jarrett Culver, there's been a report that, there's been two different reports about the Knicks. One, that they're considering Jarrett Culver with the third pick. And the other one, that they're also considering possibly trading the number three pick back to the Hawks for picks 8 and 10. There's been a report that the Grizzlies are not completely sold on Ja Morant. That also coincided with the report that Ja Morant had a minor knee procedure done and that he should be ready to go by the time the season starts.
Dude, if the real quick, if the Hawks had Trae Young, RJ Barrett, and John Collins as their core, that's amazing.
Yeah. But the thing that's interesting though is the top three picks are thought of as so much more valuable than all the other ones, including the Lakers at four, because this draft is a three-player draft. If the Knicks, let's say they end up taking Jarrett Culver at three, and then one of RJ Barrett or Ja Morant falls to number four, now all of a sudden,
Ja Morant already is a lock at two. Memphis actually already said that they
No, but there's a report that came out today that they're not completely. Look,
I saw the Grizzlies were going to trade Conley.
Yeah, there was a report, but reports change all the time. Look, I think the Grizzlies end up taking him at two, and the Knicks would be stupid not to take RJ Barrett at three.
Right.
This is all just speculation based off of reports. Jarrett Culver, he had a workout with the Lakers a few days ago. He had a 45-inch vertical.
Oh, no, I'm a big Jarrett Culver fan. He's super athletic.
I really like him, too.
And Darius Garland may be the best.
Darius Garland can shoot the lights out.
He may be the best guard in this draft. I've been watching tape, and Ja Morant's out of this world, but I'm a big fan of them both.
Garland only played 5 games, and then he tore his meniscus, so that's why we haven't heard more about him.
But the tape that I've seen,
he shot really well.
Very explosive. Both players that can help a Lakers team, and if they want to add that into some sort of Anthony Davis or Bradley Beal package, be my guest, guys.
Yeah. If the Lakers, if their offseason goes the way that they plan, where they sign a max free agent, that Anthony Davis trade becomes a lot more tricky, even if it's agreed to before the draft. If the Lakers sign a max player into their cap space, they have no cap space left, so they have to make the salaries work. Whether they want to or not, in a trade for Anthony Davis at that point, they would have to trade just about literally every other player on the roster besides LeBron and the other max players.
Sounds like the Heat back in the day when they had to sign a bunch of players for the vet minimum.
So the Pelicans should actually be rooting for the Lakers to sign a max player, because at that point, they force the Lakers' hand to where they literally just have to give the Pelicans every other player, every young player.
They can have the three of them and go sign a bunch of Mario Chalmers and you're fine.
Yep.
We're going to talk the Rockets and their quote-unquote aggressive desire to improve their roster, according to GM Daryl Morey. Chris Paul could be moved in the right deal, as well as deals for Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, and PJ Tucker. So far, rumors have floated around for Chris Paul potentially having interest from the Charlotte Hornets and the Miami Heat. So that'd be interesting for the Hornets. A little reunion for him as a Hornet, but not necessarily the same team, it's kind of confusing because he was
a New Orleans Hornet.
And now that the Charlotte Hornets, would have been the Bobcats.
It's not a reunion,
but he will be a Hornet again. So a very weird semi-reunion that we've never seen before.
And this is really confusing, but the Charlotte Hornets, when they switched from the Bobcats back to the Hornets, they actually inherited the history of the Charlotte Hornets back when they were originally Charlotte. Yeah, so even though that franchise ended up moving to New Orleans, so the Charlotte Hornets back in the day were in Charlotte. They moved to New Orleans. They were the New Orleans Hornets for a little while. Then they became the New Orleans Pelicans. At the time they became the Pelicans, there was a team in Charlotte that had started in 2005. They were the Bobcats. Once the Hornets switched their name to the Pelicans, the Bobcats, who originally were started by, I forgot the owner's name, but I think his first name was Bob or something, and he wanted his name
the
in
Bobcats.
It. Yeah. They switched to the Hornets once Michael Jordan bought them, and when they switched to the Charlotte Hornets, they inherited the history of the Charlotte Hornets, even though that franchise technically, it did move to a different city.
That's so
weird. You look in the NBA record books, the Charlotte Hornets have all of this history going back to when they started in, I think, the 80s or 90s, and the New Orleans Pelicans started in, 2011 or 2012 or something. It's strange.
It's so strange. Yeah.
So technically, Chris Paul would be part of the same team, even though he never...
So he'd be part of the same team, but still a Hornet. Yeah. So let's actually all root for Chris Paul just to get traded there.
I would be shocked, though.
Let's just make jerseys. I just want, a half-old jersey of a Hornet and then a new Hornet jersey, both half with Paul on the back. I think we should start mass producing those.
Yeah. I would be shocked, though, if the Rockets can get any type of asset for Chris Paul, because he has 2 years left on his contract, plus a player option for his third year. He's owed, I think, a little over $120 million over these next 3 years. This last year was Chris Paul, arguably his worst year statistically of his career, including his rookie year.
At the same time, it was been pretty consistent for him between 15, 16, 17 points. His career average is 18.5 because he's had some years where he's, of course, gone above and beyond that, 21, 22, when he was a bona fide star. But this year, 15.6, 3 points below his career average, 4.6 rebounds, pretty much exactly the same as his average, and then 8.2 assists, so an assist and a half less than his career average.
I believe his assists were the second lowest of his career.
The thing is, though, what stands out is 58 games, and you're talking about a guy that you signed this deep into a contract. 58 games isn't enough games for me. You know, if I'm looking for a guy that's supposed to be the second star of my team, supposed to be this not super team, but beefed up team of experience, and Chris Paul is supposed to be my veteran leadership, my dog, and he's only there 58 games, averaging 15 points, 8 assists. That's not broken, but that's not worth the dollar amount that he's
now. Not worth $40
million either. $40 million. So you're talking about those stats and moving them. Eric Gordon, another member of the backcourt, 16.2 points per game.
They could get something for
2.2 rebounds, 1.9 assists. He practically had the exact same game or career stats as he had this last season.
He's a good sixth man.
Yeah, he's a very serviceable player, very good shooter, and he's still towards the end of his prime. 68 games last year. He still has some injury history,
too. How old is Eric Gordon?
He is 30 years old, 10 years now in the league, so towards the end of his prime, if not out of it now. But with his game and how he's such a sharp shooter, this is a guy that can Ray Allen this for the rest of his career. Not the same efficiency, but
nearly the same shooter.
That wasn't what I meant, but creating a role for himself as that kind of sharp shooter for the rest of his career. And if you want to consider that more to a Bruce Bowen, someone that could just continue the rest of his career as just a three-point shooter and someone that's consistent sixth, seventh man, that's perfect for him for the rest of that career. And then you're talking about Clint Capella, who just got signed to that qualifying offer. And then
it was a 5-year, $90 million deal for Clint Capella, Clint Capella doesn't have much of an offensive game, but he's a great interior defender.
I don't mind his offensive game. He doesn't have a lot of versatility.
It's decent enough. But it's for good. 5 years, $90 million, and now down to 4 years after this year.
Right.
But Yeah, that's a really good contract for someone who can make an impact.
And then PJ Tucker, who is
even though he's 34 years old, yeah, he's going to have value.
So these are four players that have value. Daryl Morey,
not I would say Chris Paul does not have value. I would be shocked if the Rockets don't have to give up an additional asset just to get some team to take on Chris Paul. And that's why
I disagree, but I think that their return is going to be a lot weaker than we all expect.
If the Rockets, but
they're not going to have to give up a ton. They're not going to have to give up a ton with him.
If the Rockets are in win now mode, it doesn't make any sense to trade Chris Paul.
Right. I mean, you want
because the return they're going to get, they're not going to be as good of a team.
You want to run it back? Like, you just have to decide at this fork in the road right now if this is a roster that can do it, because they're goddamn close, but with the health not getting any better over the years and how the flexibility for them isn't looking too tight right now. So for them, that's a team that's looking towards the future now, and we'll see the moves they make. The Rockets haven't been talking to Mike D'Antoni about a contract extension anymore. They ended talks there, and he plans to complete the final season of his deal in 2019-2020. I think he's a good coach. I'm not a huge fan because of his time in LA. I didn't like how he really carried himself, but he's not the worst coach. And they call him a point guard whisperer, and he really has found a way to make that James Harden and Chris Paul Kendall thing work. He turned
Marshall on the Lakers into a good point guard.
No, I've totally. And so that's what I'm saying. I think he has found a way to be successful with this formula, and if they take him away and run it back, I don't think they're going to find the same success. But I think if they move things around and get a new coach in there, they can drastically change the culture and try and make a new formula. But if they want to run it back and try and sprinkle in a couple new pieces and change out a couple pieces and keep D'Antoni with his system, they have a chance to continue to fight to make it to the Western Conference Finals and fast it, because they've been pretty damn close every single year. And if the Warriors are going to implode, that leaves a small window for them at the end of Chris Paul's contract if he could find a way to squeak out 60 games and be there for a postseason run.
Yeah, he doesn't – forget the regular season. If the Rockets make the playoffs, they just need Chris Paul healthy in the playoffs. But what's ironic with Mike D'Antoni coaching out this last year is that the reason why he left the Lakers, a lot of people think he was fired. He wasn't fired. He had 1 year left on his deal.
He resigned.
He resigned. He decided – like a lot of coaches do, they don't like to coach with only 1 year remaining. But now with the Rockets, he is. That tells me that there's still a good chance that he ends up getting a contract extension. It's not, okay, we're not going to talk about this extension anymore. We're going to table talks for right now. Let's see how the offseason goes. Right. Let's see, because part of Mike D'Antoni and why he makes so much sense for the Rockets, I think Mike D'Antoni's an above-average coach, I would say. Great offensive coach.
Yes.
But what makes so much sense for him with the Rockets is he's great with James Harden and with Chris Paul, and especially working them together. If they don't have Chris Paul, look, he's still really good for James Harden, but it's not like you're going to...
But how are you supposed to be bad for James Harden? Like, do your thing. Dude. Yeah. Just Euro step, do step backs, shoot. You shoot whatever percentage you want. Do whatever you want. Like, how do you be a bad coach for James Harden? Like, just do your thing.
You just tell him,
it's James, like do whatever you want. Spin the dreidel. You know, you just let it go. Like, that's kind of the game that they're playing with him here. We're going to move on to our last topic. Kind of an off one. Tyreek Evans been removed and banned from the NBA for violating the league's drug policy. It will be able to reapply in 2 years. Not a lot of details here that we're going to dive into, but just the fact that
Not much that was reported.
Yeah, you know, violating the drug policy, if that's marijuana, or, you know, ecstasy, if that's
PEDs. Yeah, I think it has to be something more
it's got to be cocaine and other things, right.
Than marijuana, yeah.
Completely.
Because you don't go from, I haven't looked too much into it, but I don't think Tyreek Evans had been suspended at all before this for any drug use previously. So if it's marijuana, you don't go from no suspension at all to all of a sudden you're out for 2 years just like that.
And he had a comeback season too, and this just shows that maybe he was just rolling balls the whole time on ecstasy or something like that.
And this happened to OJ Mayo a few years ago, where he's now eligible to return to the NBA, but he was out for 2 years, and when he got back, he wasn't as good when he got suspended as Tyreek Evans was. Evans is a decent, serviceable player, but it's going to be the same thing. In 2 years, Evans is... if he isn't already, he will be on the wrong side of 30. Nobody's going to want him when he hasn't been in the NBA for the past 2 years, and it's so hard to keep yourself in shape no matter what you do. it's impossible to simulate live NBA game action. And being gone for 2 years, it's not something he's going to come back from. And it's a shame for him personally because he was going to be a free agent and he would have gotten a decent payday.
He would have. At least five or six million. He had a pretty good season and benefited from the Oladipo injury by
probably closer to 9 or 10 million a year.
And it's sad. I want to bring that up, you know, as someone that, you know, battled with drug stuff back in the day. I know how tough it can be and, you know, ruining potential. Just you know that you're great. You know that you have potential to be such a good person, but you just keep fucking up. So I get it. And I hate seeing this. You know, Austin Seferian Jenkins, awesome story that I like to share from the NFL. He now has an opportunity with the Patriots. I love to see guys like that who make that comeback story and find a way to get back to doing what they love. So for Josh Gordon, for guys like them, for guys like you, Tyreek Evans, I just wish for you to go get personal help wherever that may be, if that's a rehab or if that's, you know, seeking whatever help that is. And, you know, maybe you find yourself a home back in the NBA, but at the end of the day, you just want to get yourself straight as a person. So, you know, it's good to see you now have an opportunity to do so, even if it's by force, by the league. It's nice to see that, you know, a person can get back to being a person instead of losing themselves. And if that means that you no longer can be an NBA player, so be it. It's consequences, but, you know, it's better for this to happen now before it's too late.
Yeah, well said. So on that note, let's wrap it up for episode 52 of NBA Unwrapped. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. NBA Finals, 3 games in, and this is the hardest one to predict just because of all the uncertainty with injuries. So hopefully that straightens itself out soon. I'm just looking forward to an exciting, well-played series. So
yeah, and when you're talking about the series, make sure to go download our sponsor at Yamble Sports for Apple or Android. While the finals is still going on, it's going to transition to NFL and who knows what other sports. But for Yamble right now during the finals, they're doing their own contest. We're doing our own Unwrapped contest. So hit us up on our network page. We'll send you the direct link. You still are participating in the active pool for the general pool while playing in ours. So you might as well just play in ours, play in two. You might as well have twice the chance to win some money. Don't have to hook up a card. It's completely free. We literally just send you a PayPal, a Venmo, Cash App. Our contest, $15. 5 and 5, it may change soon. We're so excited.
Change for the better, not for the worse.
Yeah, you know, exactly. So we're looking to give away some stuff for Unwrapped for people that continue to, you know, play and, you know, be active with us. We wanted to just thank you guys for doing that with us and hope you guys are having a fun time because we know we are.
Yeah, and guys, if you haven't joined yet, please join our group, especially because people I'm playing with right now, it's just barbecue chicken. Easy all
day. Get out of here.
All day.
Get out of here. He's more talking
tuna. I was driving tuna, whatever you want. It's just easy.
Barbecue chicken. Get out of
here. I was driving for the first half of this game tonight.
All right.
And I still just, yeah.
Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everybody.
I need a challenge, please.
We love Yamble. We love the guys there. And we're going to be having Evan on, hopefully, for our next episode for about 5 or 10 minutes. We talked today, had a phone call. He's going to be jumping on, talk a little bit of Yamble with you guys and talk about what they're going to be doing in the future. Maybe he might have some surprises for you. We have a surprise. We have an amazing guest for our next episode. We're not going to drop it right now. We're going to keep this suspense high.
Yep.
But a guy with a lot of NBA experience in the league, a guy that's been with a couple different teams in their offices. So that's all we're going to drop now. But we're very proud to have him coming on with us this next week. So we'll stay tuned for NBA Unwrapped.
Yeah, and then just if you guys haven't, go ahead and check out our podcast on all the different platforms. Anchor, Apple iTunes Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, Breaker, Pocket Casts, and Radio Public. On Apple iTunes, if you haven't already, please go ahead and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us out, just continue to grow so we can keep generating some really great content for you guys. Go ahead to follow us on Twitter at NBA Unwrapped. You can follow our site Twitter at Unwrapped Sports. Follow me on Twitter at Corbin Unwrapped, Perry on Twitter at Perry Aston. Go ahead and check out our website at unwrappedsports.com.
While you're there, sign up for our newsletter, the little orange box on the homepage. First name, last name, email. It takes 2 seconds. You get the best weekly content sent to your email. We also post it online. If you don't like the whole email newsletter thing, you can at least see it on our Twitter posts, everything like that. So stay up to date with Unwrapped and make sure that you're following our team with all the amazing content. Shout out to our contributors, our partner podcast, everybody writing articles. We're killing it here at Unwrapped. And if you're not part of the train, get off. So we'll see you guys next time and have a great time watching the finals. So excited to see how the rest of this finals goes out.